Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick and co-host is Chris Lucian. And today we are excited to have Moses Homan and Angie Slocum on the show. And we got some really exciting topics lined up. So we got the some circa 2000, early 2000s mob programming for Moses and Andy back at ThoughtWorks then. And what was their experiences then? What was the genesis of their experiences there? And then comparing that with how momming is done now. Flair Health and ThoughtWorks. And and then if we have time, we'll get to some team building and mobbing stuff. So before jumping into those topics, let's have you introduce yourself, starting with you, Moses.
Hey, everybody. I'm Moses Homan. I've been a coder since I was a kid, since I was 10 years old. I started my professional career with Andy, actually, at ThoughtWorks a couple of decades ago, which is kind of amazing to imagine that. Wonderful place to get my start learning Agile and all that kind of stuff. And doing that for a while, mostly working in since ThoughtWorks in various healthcare related things. Most recently, I'm CEO and co-founder of a company called Flair Health. We're a healthcare tech startup, remote, but I'm based here in Chicago, and we help patients get to the right specialist faster.
How about you, Andy?
Andy Slocum. I'm a principal consultant at ThoughtWorks, which means I'm sort of the tech side of running big accounts. I've started actually with Moses. That's my first job. I've just hit 22 years at ThoughtWorks, which is a little mind blowing for me. Custom software delivery, helping teams, you know, helping my teams get better, helping the client get better. That's my passion.
Right on. Well, thanks for those intros and let's dive into it. So, tell us about your experiences in the early 2000s with mobbing or mob programming. For many of us in the community, that sounds early, so that we're really intrigued to hear what was going on there. So kick it off, please.
Yeah. When I joined ThoughtWorks, my previous to ThoughtWorks, I was a graduate student. I got a PhD in physics. And as a graduate student, I observed folks that were entering the professorial ranks and kind of how they negotiated their early careers. And one of the things they did is they organized group events. This one person that was really great, had an amazing career, great guy. So I kind of followed him and had that thought in my brain. And I also, ThoughtWorks was a wonderful place to start a professional software development career. They, like, first year, they sent me to Uppsala 2000, which was the big object-oriented programming conference back then, which I'm sure nobody's heard of at this point. at that conference, I heard this guy, Richard Gabriel, who was one of the big software patterns people. I guess he went by Dick Gabriel. He was very, like, typical of the time, sort of software guru guy with long hair and big beard, you know, just kind of definitely the kind of, like, what I liked about software, that the community, as opposed to a lot of the structure and hierarchy of, and sort of traditional aspects of academia. So I loved going to his talk. He gave a talk at Uppsala entitled Mob Software, The Erotic Life of Code. A very provocative title. He was a poet as well. He viewed software writing and poetry sort of on the same plane. And his talk was all about how the fact that we don't have enough programmers is going to be solved in the future by the fact that everybody will be kind of contributing to code, and the mob will be shaping the software that we all use. Prescient in terms of the development of GitHub and that kind of stuff. It's not quite to the level that he was talking about, but still pretty cool talk. He was, like, dressed in some kind of robe, and he had, like, a bell he would ring between the sections of his talk. So it made an impact on me. At the time, ThoughtWorks, the team that Andy and I were on, you want to speak a little bit about that, Andy?
Yeah, sure. We were writing a large application. It was sort of a custom workflow. And it had, when Moses and I joined, it had been going for about a year and a half. But we'd already had something like 200 pages. You know, this was back in the JSP and EJB era. So it was a lot of code, a lot of, you know, generated stubs and skeletons trying to get your data into and out of the database. And what we found coming in was, you know, the team was sort of maybe a dozen developers, but they were already segmented very much into, you know, you had the two devs that only worked on this section, the two devs that only worked on this section. And we had been hearing about extreme programming, and we've been hearing about, you know, collective code ownership and test-driven design and unit testing. And so we were really sort of scratching our heads at how we get from very, very sort of siloed code development into a more collective model. And we were even seeing a lot of, you know, classes that were copied and reused in different parts of the app, you know, unchanged or slightly changed. And so we were trying to figure out how to solve that.
So, yeah. And the idea that we started toying around with was, well, why don't we do the opposite of everybody working on their own thing and actually get together for a lunch and talk about the code that we're writing and maybe get to know it from each other. And that practice went through a couple of iterations. It was a little tricky. Like at first it was just talks people would give about some part of the code that they had. And like most people fell asleep, you know? and so we tried to make it a little more interactive. And so we came up with this idea of having people actually refactor the code in the session during the lunch. So eat lunch and then refactor. So, and the name that we came up with, that sort of inspired by Dick Gabriel's talk, was mob programming. As we knew about pair programming, we knew about, you know, drivers, navigators from that, and Laurie Anderson's wonderful work in that area, and many others. And so we just thought, like, what's bigger than two? It's a mob. So, that's kind of how the genesis started, but it was just focused on refactoring. That's all that we did. And we actually started refactoring stuff that we would actually use. It was an evolution. It started off just familiarization, but realized that making it more interactive, people were more engaged and it was more meaningful for everybody in the room. And so that's kind of how it went. And we did it a few times. And at the time, like, ThoughtWorks was just getting into the Agile space. We had one project that was really sort of like the Agile project at ThoughtWorks, which is funny to say at this point in time. And we were not on it, but we wanted to be. So, you know, we wanted to get involved in the Agile space too. And we submitted a paper about this thing that we were doing to XP Universe 2001, which is a conference before Agile was the big term. XP was more prominent at the time, extreme programming. And we presented that paper, and it was like, it was cool. Like, we got published in Extreme Programming Perspectives, which was this anthology of a bunch of papers that were published in conferences around that time. And it was a lot of fun. And the funny thing is, after that experience, I didn't use mob programming for quite a while. I will confess, we use it at ThoughtWorks for that lunch. And then Andy knows more about what happens after that than I do, but, my mobbing story resumes much, much later in my life.
Yeah, and maybe I can jump in. So, you know, I found it really interesting that you were just refactoring during that time. And so, you know, when I started mobbing, I'd never heard of the term mob programming or anything along those lines. In our scenario, it was, you know, a single developer was having trouble with the delivery, and then we all got into a room to work together on the code. And then it started by refactoring, and then discovering kind of a dependency that was known to be permanently buggy, and so a large portion of the system had to be rewritten. I think, like, maybe a key difference between our experiences, which is really interesting, was that I think we were forced to rewrite the entire software together as a mob at that point. and so we just kept going and going and going.
Right.
But you know, I'm actually, you know, I think back to that first day, and we retrospected at the end and said, yeah, we should keep doing this. And by the time we finished that first project, we had done the entire software from beginning to end that way. And we were comparing to what happened when the person was solo. So it's a really interesting thing, because it's probably true that had we not been forced to rewrite that entire software, then maybe we may have not continued, right? So it's kind of an interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really cool. That is like kind of, I've had some good kind of lunch and learn experiences previous places too. A lot of good stuff has happened out of that. From those sessions, was there any observations or comments or reflection from people who participated? Or was it just kind of like, oh, that was an interesting lunch, moving on, you know? Or do you have any memory back then of anything?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we, you know, we struggled figuring out how to do it well. We would, so for instance, you know, as Moses said, we would spend time refactoring the code. And then, you know, lunch was over and we wouldn't really have gotten it done. So then we started appointing someone from the meeting to go and sort of complete the refactoring, right? We've got you moving in a direction and you're going to go and complete it and sort of come back to us. And then we'll add that back into the code base, right? So getting it to where now we can write enough tests around it. You know, you can't really do that in an hour. Not for the sort of size of the code we were working with, the size of the classes. So that was one thing. Another one that was interesting was we were asking people to bring classes to this lunch and learn. And what we found is they were only sort of bringing the classes that they were proud of, right? So we'd say, okay, yeah. Hey, Carl, it's your turn to bring the code. And he would bring like his favorite little piece of code to demo. And so Moses and I wrote a script to just sort of run through the code and pick a random class. And we run that 3 or 4 times to find something interesting, but maybe it was buried or hidden or, you know, some deep dependency that nobody wanted to look at and nobody wanted to talk about. And, you know, to really force us to get at, we need a testable code base and we need to really understand what a shared code base means and how do we get to that point and how do we not have, you know, 8 XML utility classes, right? Which was just sort of obviously a bad anti-pattern, but it was proliferating around the code. The third thing that we did that was helped with engagement was, you know, we would have, you know, about a dozen devs in the lunchroom working on this code, and you still only had, you know, 3 or 4 people participating. So we tried a variation where we would actually say, okay, every split into group of, you know, groups of 3 or 4 and everybody take this code and work on it. And that actually helped, you know, there were always a couple of people who were just going to eat lunch and not talk. And that sort of got everybody engaged more. And so we would all say, okay, this is the method we're working on. We're all going to go split out and work on it. And then we're going to come back together and we're going to look at each version of that and see what we like from it and figure out which one we want to keep.
Nice. That's great. Also, it was a group of 12. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was picturing a smaller group for some reason.
Yeah, it was a big dev team. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Right on. I mean,
and the goal of it really was to try to get us all to think more about collaborative work as opposed to siloed work. And like that, we didn't think of it as a practice that we were going to do to you know, as like necessarily a better way to code in general. It's just that we wanted to make the group more collaborative as a whole. I think the goal was really actually to channel us more towards like pair programming and that kind of thing.
Testability.
That was our conception at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Testability, trying to introduce unit testing into, you know, 1.5-2-year-old code base was a challenge.
Yeah.
But I think as Andy said, we ran into some interesting things that happen in mobbing when people do it more broadly, which is like, how do you keep everybody in a larger group engaged and that kind of stuff. So I'd love to hear from you all and kind of what you've seen.
I have a take on that. You know, so I don't know if you've ever been to an open space conference, but they have kind of the law of personal mobility, which is like, if you're when you attend a talk, if you're not interested and you're not contributing, then you can go to a different talk. So
right. We
actually applied that to the mobs. So if you're not learning and you're not contributing, then go to a different mob or start a new one or, you know, whatever. And that typically just kind of self-regulates throughout the day. But yeah, and kind of like I said, we kept mobbing for a very long time. And so, we've gone through, you know, we retrospected at the end of, you know, each day for a while, and then each week for a while, and then each month for a while. So there's been tons of refinement over the years. It regulates pretty well. And then also, you know, I think there's the opposite piece of it too, where it's like, hey, we want to go and work by ourselves because this code is not interesting enough. It's like, well, like what makes it not interesting? And one other kind of anti-pattern I saw was people wanting to go and work by themselves when the problem was so simple that it should have been automated. And so, you know, I think the flip side of that is when you're going to reduce the size of the mob, is the problem actually more simple than the people need to be there? Or is it something that the group needs to think about how to automate all that work in the future? So, you know, I think some good examples of that is like adding a translation library to the entire code base for languages, right? So like, you know, you could all split up and write the piece, you know, go into each display page and replace all the text with a translation module, or you can write a thing that'll go and do that to the code for you and for all of your future projects, right?
Right.
And so, you know, so those are the two things. So don't go so small that you should be automating as a larger group, and don't go so big that people are languishing. And if it's a general rule and people self-organize around the work, then that happens very naturally.
That makes sense.
Nice. Yeah, and I've also seen what you all did too, which was split up. Sometimes that really works. If you have the mob feels too big, people feel like they have more voice if it's a smaller group, or some people won't talk in a group larger than five, right? And so, or they're learning to grow in that area. So making it smaller usually helps increase the psychological safety for people to share their opinions. Or, you know, for example, refactoring is great because if someone's real proud of a class, or someone's, you know, in there, that's much harder to say in a group of 12, like, hey, I smell something over here, you know. But we're in a smaller group, it might be easier to surface that. And a couple of more things about that first event before kind of going to today for y'all is, I'm just curious because this was, you know, pairing was around then, right? So you mentioned driver navigator, but obviously there wasn't a lot of like mob patterns or roles or those kind of things going on. So when you were doing the 12 person mob or each of the individual mobs, was it a single driver? Was there any rotation? What was kind of the flow of, I guess, conversation and code editing, I suppose? Yeah.
So what I recall is we had, instead of a navigator, we had somebody we called a narrator, which was the person that knew that part of the code already and could kind of speak to how it fit into other things and give us all some context. Because, you know, again, Andy said big code base. And then we went from having one driver to having two drivers at some point is what I feel like I remember, again, trying to get more engagement from people. What do you recall, Andy?
Yeah, we definitely didn't put an emphasis on rotation, you know, sort of as is popular today. If it was two people, it was just those two people for lunch. You know, they might take turns driving, but it wasn't so much a concerted effort to let everybody touch the keyboard. It was definitely like, you know, also frankly, like 2000s AV, like, you get one person plugged into the projector, and that's kind of it. So, you know, and people were eating lunch, so it was not as dynamic as you'd probably see today. With, you know, there was no notion of time or a clock or that. It was, you know, let's sit down and talk through this code, and then like play with it a bit.
Nice, right on. And we still see that too in mobbing, where people will go so to speak freestyle, right? And I've seen that work really well too. As long as there's good, you know, psychological safety and people are giving each other feedback and there's good equality navigation, that can work really well still. And I guess one last question I have before jumping to the next topic is, so you did those kind of lunch and learn sessions together. Did you see any side effects from doing it just for a little bit and then going back to how you normally worked? Did it have any negative or positive effects on the other work?
So I left that team and I ended up doing some stuff with the initial India teams that ThoughtWorks had and for a different client. So I can't speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, it got more, definitely a greater emphasis on code ownership, collective code ownership. We thought more critically about trying to reuse code versus, you know, sort of copy and paste across modules. We struggled at times given, you know, huge static methods, you know, in Java. How do you extend something like that? How do you reuse something like that? But we moved in that direction. We coupled that with starting to, you know, in our iteration plannings to sign up for stuff outside of your wheelhouse. So it was sort of a concerted effort because we all really wanted to get to be that Model XP, you know, extreme programming team. So we were trying both through sort of story assignment or picking up stories and from the side of mobbing to get more collective.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's, it's tough when you're solo because you don't know what you don't know. Right. So you may think there is no, I'm not, you know, making a duplication of something, you know, and you've tried a little bit to find it, but I've noticed that quite a bit in mobs is that someone will speak up and be like, "Hey, I noticed you're rewriting this." And they're, "Rewriting what? I'm just writing it." No. This thing exists buried over here. Right. And, you know, we could reuse that or extend it. And so I see that happen a lot more with mobbing. And I think, Chris, you can speak to the original mobs. I think a lot of duplication was noticed. And so that apps were starting to be automated because of like people were together and realizing that, oh, we're kind of doing the same thing with a different, slightly different schema database or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It was, you know, a lot of the projects, you know, we had noticed that there was big similarities to a lot of the projects. And so everybody was working separately. And then when everybody was working together, they're like, "Oh, let's mob on the thing that I've been responsible for. Okay, let's mob on the thing that you've been responsible for." And it's like, wow, like, you know, we could have easily written a generator to make both of these apps from the ground up. And so, you know, it was funny, our productivity, you can't even measure our productivity because it was like everybody was working on their own thing. And then we got together and then delivered, you know, a thing. And then we were like, okay, let's keep doing this. And then we made those discoveries. And then it was like the next three or four projects were all kind of similar things to what everybody had been doing already. And so we wrote a generator that reverse engineered the database schema, generated all the CRUD operations. And then essentially we could use a DSL to make any like custom operations afterwards. And so we had finished our next like three or four projects in less time than it would have taken to do one of them. And then it expanded to all kinds of other options. And so our productivity just went like more than exponential. but people don't really realize it because you see the people programming, you know, but the reality was that you know, if everybody had stayed siloed, then those projects likely would have been just onboarded to the team, and then somebody would have picked it up and then tinkered away for years. And they really didn't need to be. And so it was fascinating. And so then it just opened up a whole new line of work to the point where we were an internal only team. And then we took over all of external product development as well. And so it was you see all these things that are kind of lean waste, you know, duplication and defects and all that stuff. And it's stuff kind of melts away as you do it.
It kind of goes back to that insight that many have had about, you know, coding is not actually building. It's a design exercise, not a build exercise.
Yeah.
The computer does the building and yeah. Programmers design the, you know, provide the specs for the, you know, the building. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you know, it's not just laying bricks on a wall. It's a process of figuring out how the wall should be constructed and tearing it down and redoing it, you know, 50 times over.
Yep.
Nice. Cool. Well, this might be a good transition to, so that was back then in the early 2000s. How's mobbing like for y'all right now? Or recently?
Yeah. So I worked on very tiny teams for a long time after ThoughtWorks. Usually with people that weren't as versed in Agile as I was. And so my feeling has always been to try to have people come up with their own practices as much as possible with some guidance I've learned over time. Just because you're more invested in retrospectives go better, and it's a better way for teams to figure out how they want to work. Recently I've hired a couple of more experienced, very agile experienced folks from another consultancy that started here in Chicago, Ape Flight, that also came out of the Agile Crucible. And they brought mobbing into the team. So we've been doing a lot more of it recently to do with new team members, kind of getting used to the code base and learning from each other. And we've got a new product that we're rolling out that they've been kind of making design decisions about, and how does it should be different from the other stuff, and how should it be the same. And so like all that has been super helpful, and it's been just really cool to see other people bring that in to what we're doing.
Yeah, for us, for ThoughtWorks, I think that we've been using it mostly for training. So, you know, sort of college grads, we have a ThoughtWorks University internal training that we do, and they do a lot of mobbing there. It's for us, it's a lot about culture, learning, you know, sort of teaching TDD, learning to code collaboratively, and sort of slowing down and speaking very intentionally about what you're doing and why you're doing it, you know, as you're pairing. Outside of that, code dojos, you know, if a team decides they want to do lunch and learns and learn Go or learn some new language, I've used it there, you know, where we go into a conference room and get up on the projector and work through the examples together. We've used it to teach clients. So a lot of times, there's a component to our projects of teaching the clients about our methods and about Agile and sort of how to really implement it as developers and not just, you know, Scrum waterfall or whatever. So we use it there a lot. We've done the, you know, three mobs on the same problem there as part of like a boot camp for their devs, though. I haven't found a lot of examples of it being a core practice. I wish I could have found that and talked about it, but it's been very much about learning still and learning culture and learning TDD for us. I did find out that a friend of mine, Kieran Murphy, who's teaching computer science classes in the evenings, he's at ThoughtWorks as well. He's been teaching his classes as mob programming, nice. So completely from start to finish. And his students say they love it because it's really about talking through, okay, how would a debugger work here, and what should we step into, and what should we look at, and learning Git and learning things like that. He said that they learn these things much faster and get sort of more competent with source control and with the notion of software design, and sort of understand their thinking and get to a place as a team, as a class that they can't get individually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for the school classes that I've seen using it, for sure, there's large leaps in, you know, I think especially in source control too. I've also seen that where it's like, they just never would have used source control or they'd email the files back, you know, but one person in the team would know how to use Git and, you know, just studied it outside or whatever, or the professor assigns it. And then like all of a sudden they're kind of all using it. I've seen that happen too.
Yeah. And you know, that's a pretty interesting pattern I've seen where the adoption rate for mobbing and pairing seems to be higher in a bootcamp onboarding learning type scenario than a doing type scenario. And, you know, whether you're designing or, you know, like engineers getting together on a team to accomplish story A or something like that. Right. That always makes me wonder what the, you know, is systemic, you know, is it the people, is it, you know, so there's a lot of questions that brew in my mind there, but that's just something I've been thinking about from a bigger perspective. But
For us, we do it fairly often now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because the team has the right balance of people who are at different stages of their career and had different levels of experience with the practice. I think that's mm-hmm. a lot of what it is too, because I think, you know, this how you sort of structure a team with different levels of expertise is something I've definitely learned, like how important that is to creating a healthy team, you know, that mm-hmm. really fun to work in and productive and accomplish a lot. So
nice. Yeah, no, that's great. And I think what's awesome from both of you have shared is that it appears the teams have ownership, right? It's no one's forcing them to do it. And when they do it, if they want to, and that's great. And it's because they've experimented with it and found value. And that's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. Anything else on your current mobbing before, you know, jumping into team building and mobbing, or any questions you had for us?
Not really.
I guess I'd love to hear. I think that. Sorry, Moses, let me cut you off. You've done mobbing as a sort of a first class concern. I would love to hear more about that. I had almost never thought of it outside of a learning and sharing sort of context. So,
sure.
You know, to some extent, how is it different?
Yeah. Well, so we've been doing full-time mobbing for the last 10 years. So it started with one team for about 4 years. That team got to the point where we were releasing twice a day to production with zero bugs reported from production for a year and a half. So there was kind of... After that 4 years, there's kind of an external third-party auditor that kind of came in, and they kind of evaluated software practices across all the different teams at the company and just said, you know, you need to really grow this to every other aspect of software you're doing. So then we formed a department, and we started kind of gradually growing. There's a paper out there called Growing the Mob, for the Big Agile Alliance proceedings. And they just talk about, you know, kind of scaling up that team from 5 people to 30 and then kind of using a kind of cellular biology grow and split, you know, method where you just kind of add people to the mob until people are, you know, less interested, and then you split and then you add people until they split again. I'd say as far as differences go, you know, I think just all the benefits that you get from pairing, you know, you kind of increase this. I think Austin had told me this a little while ago, the benefits that you get from pairing just go up even more as you add people. And there, you know, there's a ceiling of complexity there, kind of like what I was talking about as well, where it's like, you know, you lose engagement. The largest mob I've ever been in was like 20 people that was at a conference working on a beta key for a quantum computer, because everybody was chiming in, right? It was like very engaged, active. Everybody had ideas of what to try and thoughts on it. Kind of all the way down. But like the difference between 2 and 3, I think is really important. When you're just 2 and somebody leaves to take a break, like things can't continue on, right? Without like some like catch up and things like that. And then also the social dynamic is very different. I think in a pair, you always kind of, it's very common to establish like a, you know, this person is teaching that person, right? There's like a leadership dynamic that forms in pairs that just doesn't exist in a trio. It's more of like everybody's kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. It becomes more of a dialogue than almost like a more one-sided thing, especially if you're doing kind of like a senior and a junior or something like that, where it's like really obvious. I also think that those are kind of the main points. Austin, do you have any that come up?
Sure. I'm actually interested to hear Moses first, if you don't mind, Moses.
That's an interesting question. I mean, you know, a large period of time separated my two experiences. and the very different teams. Andy mentioned, the ThoughtWorks team is 12 developers. Ours is 4 developers plus me on the side. I would agree with what you said, Chris. Like, I think that it changes the social dynamics in a really nice way, where people at any level of experience can just kind of, you know, like there's a thing in junior senior pairing, so to speak, where people talk about, where it's, you know, people think that the senior is teaching the junior, but a lot of times the junior asks lots of really good questions that makes the senior actually think about what they're doing. And so he or she can like make better decisions as well. But I think it goes beyond that, because sometimes you know, I've seen roles where people take on, you know, holding the team accountable to like this making enough sense in a certain way, you know? Kind of bringing us back to that. And so I totally agree that it changes those dynamics where it's no longer so much of a mentor-mentee type of interaction. But yeah, I think, you know, we'll see how it evolves. We've been doing it for like a few months now, 2 or 3 months within these new people joining. And it's, and everybody loves it. Like the team keeps telling me like in our one-on-ones, like how much they enjoy the teamwork and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see where it goes.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess for me, one thing I've been reflecting on lately is I've kind of known this about myself, my life for a while was, if I'm a computer, I'm always just one window open. Like there's no multi-threading going on for me. Or if I do, I'm very terrible at it. And so what I love about mobbing is that it allows, I think it allows multiple people to kind of have that mode and each coming at it from a different angle. So if you're in a mob and you're learning, you're focusing on what you're learning. You don't have to be stressed out or concerned or worried about necessarily delivering at that moment because the mob can help carry that, you know. And we tell people who are coming in and are that are less experienced, like it's great. Your focus is learning and that's okay. You know what I mean? And then once you're kind of you feel you're at an adequate level to contribute, your focus can be on contributing, right? And then once you're and see so your single focus can be that. And then once you've kind of gotten maybe past those two levels in a code base or with a team or something like that, then you can start focusing on meta things like, oh, how are people interacting? How can I, you know, make nudges or suggestions to help people interact better? How are we interacting with our customers and stakeholders? How can I nudge it in that direction? You know, so they're working on, you know, code piece A, and I'm seeing them make two or three assumptions that we don't know are true about the domain. Maybe I should interrupt and ask a question to lead us to talk to someone or, you know, and so what I've seen, what's really cool is if everyone in a mob is kind of doing their different piece, all those things happen instead of, you know, resyncing later. So everything, I love a saying, I can't remember his name from LinkedIn. I'll have to look it up, but he said, everything done async has a resync, right? And so whether it's refactoring, whether it's learning, whether it's contribution, whether it's, you know, the code being implemented is out of line with customers' expectations, or we're taking a huge horizontal slice, you know, so everything done async will need to be resynced later anyways. And I feel with mobbing, a lot of those things will happen. The more and more expertise you have in the mob, it'll just happen there and it's done and the quality's built
in.
Right. Yeah. Cool. But that's just my experience. As we like to say, we're just sharing and not recommending. And, you know, every team and dynamic is very different. You'll have different results of experiments, but cool. So anything else you guys wanted to share on team building with mobbing in your experiences? That's kind of the final topic for today.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say it, you know, it did our original experiment with it really did help break down those barriers between the team. You know, it took time. People had built sort of their areas of expertise, you know, so-and-so was the credit scoring person and so-and-so was the, you know, financial engine person. And breaking that down did take time, and it took dedication and sort of very intentional, actions across the board. You know, we must make sure that, you know, Andy gets to sign up for this credit thing, this credit story, and Andy's going to be the lead for this credit story because we can't just have Carl do it, right? If Carl is in charge of it, then, you know, I'll sit there with him, but I won't really learn. But if I say I am the primary on this card, then, you know, it will help break that down. So it was a good step for us to see, you know, where the silos were, where the knowledge was, where the sort of dusty, dark corners of the code, where there was some really bad, you know, redundancy in there. It was very effective at all that. And it got us eventually to where everybody kind of knew everything. And we had some specialties for, you know, very specific parts of the code, but generally we ended up in a very collaborative team and very, very clear collective code ownership.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's cool how that practice that we just sort of, you know, really dabbled with for a while for that very specific purpose way back in, you know, 2001, I think it largely stayed dormant for like a decade until there's a few people using, I mean, it's a practice that's been used since the beginning of time. I'm sure programmers getting around a keyboard is not a thing. Then when, you know, Woody and folks really started to promote it and like make it a thing that was talked about a lot, I think he did the discipline a great service to really deepen our appreciation for how deep collaboration can go and how impactful it can be on a team. It's just cool. It's fun. It was fun to kind of see it have a life beyond the lunch and learn experiences that were helpful to us, but like we were not promoting it a lot ourselves. We did the talk, but then we kind of let it be after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I saw such a huge benefit to it that like I went from, you know, conference to conference talking about it, you know, Woody did as well. And, you know, we really wanted to grow that. Because I at previous jobs, I had really seen a lot of dysfunction. And then I, you know, in this really great experience we had, a lot of that dysfunction just kind of evaporated away. And then we just became really, really effective. And you know, just coming out of that experience, it was like, yeah, we should just talk about it all the time.
Actually, you just made me think of something, Chris, which is that I wonder, you spoke about the social dynamics. I also wonder about, you know, on large developer teams, and I think this was somewhat the case on that team I just mentioned, there was personal stuff between some of the people, you know? And the more you work with other people, you know, you get to know them as people, and it's like you have more of a collegial relationship, and that just creates a different feeling for the team dynamics, I would imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Are those the types of dysfunctions you're mentioning as well?
Interpersonal stuff. It's, you know, probably in a mob, interpersonal stuff is either goes away completely or is amplified, but because, you know, if it's amplified, then you can talk about it, you can dig into it.
Right.
But I see like in solo development, for sure, it's like people can hate each other for years and years and years and years, and they can avoid each other enough, but sabotage each other here and there to the point where, you know, the company ends up spending a lot of money on that dysfunction. In mobbing, it comes to a head very quickly. And so you get into, you know, feedback cycles and other things along those lines. So for sure.
I mean, you know, as I've interviewed developers over the years, I always do a pair programming session with them, which is now pretty common. But what's wonderful about that is it's so immediate. Like for one time, there was one time when I had a developer, she just stood up and said, you know what? I'm not into TDD. This is done. and I don't think it would have come to a head if we had not been pairing, and I'm not sort of prompting her a little bit, you know, why don't we try writing the test first and that kind of thing. And just, you know, it fleshes things out. And that was a great result of that interview, because she would have been miserable working with us. So anyway, yeah, I think, it's that personal interaction, collaboration is just so, it's so important. So,
And I'll just say that there are, you know, there are companies that are less extreme and more extreme in the practice as well. And so like even more extreme than us, you know, I know a company that does, you know, mob HR and mob finance, and their entire companies, everything on their company is visible on a release train and all this other stuff, like very, very interesting, you know, all the way to just, you know, learning sessions. Right. I think all in all, the practice in general just provides a different style. So,
And I really like what you said, Moses, about there's really probably nothing new about a group of people getting around one thing to work on it, or you say like a keyboard I love that there, you know, that there's really probably nothing new under the sun with a lot of this stuff. It's a lot of rediscovering, of great things from the past. And actually me and a coworker did kind of, it was partially joking talk on like classic Agile and mobbing, like finding all these ancient quotes of people working together, you know, instead of spinning up. But, you know, and you think about it, because so many things lend itself to working together, literally side by side. I remember someone wrote a LinkedIn post saying, like, imagine a movie where no one worked together and literally everything was done asynchronous code review, but like person A records by themselves and then person B records by themselves. And then everything is edited and you know, right, merged together, so to speak, back in.
Actually, there is a case of that. So,
I know, but
there's a really great one. Arrested Development, actually, the first two seasons were recorded with everybody together. And the third season, no one could schedule together. So they actually recorded separately and like stitched everything together.
Yeah.
And the quality went considerably down. And so maybe I'll get a bunch of, if you actually like the third season of Arrested Development, please let us know in the comments. It was a kind of an exact case like that. They just couldn't get that synergy that they had when they were working together. And I think that exists in software development as well. So that's a great point.
One more thing I was going to say, Austin, just sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Is completely agree. I think there's something really fundamental to what you just said. Coming from sort of an innovation perspective, working in a startup for a while, trying to figure out how to make something new in the world. A lot of people's conception of innovation is you have this amazing idea and then the world changes. That does sometimes happen to some extent, but I think much more common is you have an idea and then you have to make it live. You have to get it out into the world. You have to get people engaging with it. You have to figure out how they engage with it and what makes it meaningful to them. And so like all the thoughts that have come into our space around user research and human-centered design and lean startup, like that have taught us to be responsive to the world as we innovate. I think that's what Chris and Woody did with this practice, is that they really went deep into it and they really engaged the world with it. And that's why it's so popular today. So I think that lesson is just really important for everybody to learn. And we've definitely encountered it trying to change healthcare for the better, is how important that kind of sensitivity to the world and the need to make the innovation something that people really engage with to make it successful.
Awesome. All right. We are about at time. And so I wanted to ask you guys if you had anything to plug or share before we closed out the show.
Andy?
Yeah, sure. ThoughtWorks is hiring. I've worked there, as I said, a long time, 2 decades. I love it. And I encourage anybody, to take a look at it and come enjoy fixing hard problems with me.
Awesome. We are not currently hiring for developers at Flare Health, but we are hiring a lead user researcher, and I'm sure we'll be hiring developers later this year. So please reach out to us at Flare Health, which is FLARE Health.
Okay.
And thank you both so much for this opportunity. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Absolutely. Thank
really
you.
Awesome.
To our audience, if you maybe know somebody who wants to know maybe the differences between mobbing and pairing and otherwise, or could see the different contexts that you could use mobbing in, then please share this episode with them. With that, please like, subscribe, share your comments, and we will see you next time. Thank you and bye-bye.